Good evening, and welcome to Radio Owls, where the topics are history, law, politics, and current events. I'm Andrew McBurney. Tonight, I'd like to talk about Victoria Avenue in Flint, Michigan, and what makes America great. It is said that the neighborhood we grow up in has a way of imprinting itself on our brains and becomes a representation of what an ideal neighborhood is, largely one would expect from a sense of nostalgia for one's youth. I know there are people out there for whom this will not be true, because there was nothing in their youth that engenders any feelings of nostalgia. I'm lucky in that respect. I had a good upbringing and fond memories from my youth that are easily recalled, and bad memories, of which there were mercifully few, just as easily dismissed. It certainly seems that there are quite a few of our fellow Americans today who long for what for them must be a better world of the past, which is why the Make America Great Again slogan seems to be resonating so well for President Trump. It's a reactionary slogan. Implicit in it is the message that America was once great, and then was no longer great, and needs to be made great again. A question, however, is, what was great about America? In other words, what greatness did we have that we lost? When were we great? What things were great? We know that there are those on the political left that have some of the same feelings. We know, for example, that there were people who supported Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primaries in 2016 who nevertheless voted for President Trump in the general election, just as there are Sanders supporters today who are considering voting for President Trump in the 2020 general election. Granted, it is not very many, but 2016 was a close election that came down to 80,000 votes in the Rust Belt states, and 2020 may very well also be a close election. One of those Rust Belt states was Michigan, where President Trump defeated Hillary Clinton by just over 10,000 votes out of 4.8 million total votes cast. That's a difference of 0.2%. Not 2%, 0.2%. My parents are from Michigan, and I was born there, in Ann Arbor, where my parents went to college. However, they were both from Flint. After we moved to Texas, when I was three, whenever we would go back to Michigan to visit, we would always go to Flint, or occasionally Detroit to see my dad's father. The neighborhood I grew up in is in the north side of San Antonio, and I have a lot of fond memories of that neighborhood. But the neighborhood that imprinted itself upon me, as an ideal, was the neighborhood my mother grew up in Flint, Michigan. My grandmother's house, which she and my grandfather moved into in the early 1930s, is on Victoria Avenue on the south side of Flint. The whole neighborhood consists of a lot of small one-story homes with basements. I mention that because a lot of my listeners are from Texas, where we have heard tell of basements. One of the basement windows also served as a coal chute for when coal would be delivered for the furnace in the basement. My mother, when she was young, built a brick barbecue in the backyard near the back fence that they used to grill hot dogs and hamburgers on. These homes were built for men who would work in the General Motors factory and their families. My grandfather, before he passed away in 1954, would walk down to the corner of Victoria Avenue and Fenton Road along with the other men from Victoria Avenue to catch the bus every morning to go to work. He was part of the United Auto Workers strike in 1936, which my mother says he never talked about after it happened. The establishment of the UAW helped lead to my grandfather getting a pension, which after his death was paid to my grandmother as she raised two kids. After my uncle and my mother were grown and went away for school and marriage, the pension was enough that my grandmother was able to save money to bequeath to each of her grandkids when she passed away, a little more than 30 years after my grandfather. That money helped me and my siblings and my cousins pay for college. The thing is, the current Republican Party, rallying behind the Make America Great Again slogan, is pretty hostile to unions, even more so than the conservative Republican presidential candidate in 1964, Barry Goldwater, who recognized the importance of unions but took issue with some of the federal laws protecting the unions. Those auto worker pensions from General Motors, negotiated by the UAW, help keep kids and the grandkids of auto workers in the middle class. During the times I remember visiting Victoria Avenue, the size of the middle class in America was already starting to decrease, although slightly. In 1972, about 60% of Americans were middle class, 25% were below middle class, and 14% were wealthy. The decline became more pronounced after 1990, and by 2016, 52% of Americans were middle class, 29% below, and 19% above. Additionally, over that time, median income within the upper classes increased more than median income within the middle class. But as a kid, I wasn't aware of the directions things were taking for the middle class when I would visit Victoria Avenue. The elementary school my mom attended was at the corner of Victoria Avenue and Fenton Road, called Cody Elementary Academy, and close enough that she walked to school every day. It was a beautiful old building, built in a Tudor style, once popular for schoolhouses. I used to love to walk down to my mom's old school and play in the playground. Behind my grandmother's backyard was a park with baseball fields. Her back fence was a cyclone fence, so you could see the whole park. It had a gate so we could walk right out into it. In that park, families grew victory gardens during World War II. The park is still there, but the baseball fields are gone, and Cody no longer exists. Flint Public Schools was forced to close it due to lack of funding, and after several fires, the city of Flint finally tore it down. There's nothing there now where the school stood but grass and the trees that had been planted in front of it when it had been built. The first Halloween I remember was at my grandmother's house on Victoria Avenue. She had a large bowl of caramels to hand out, and the custom of Halloween was explained to me so that I could help pass out candy. We had the windows open, as was the front door, with only the screen door in the doorway. The evening was nice, and a cool breeze blew gently through the house. My mother's recollection of Halloween when she was a kid was that groups of kids without their parents would go from house to house, block by block, although the parents were sitting out on their front porches, but they all kept an eye on one another's kids. Here's a message for a historian or digital archaeologist who might come across this hundreds of years in the future. If you want a barometer of America in the 20th and 21st centuries, try to find stories about Halloween. There's a lot of other holidays that will give you plenty of good information, but customs at Halloween are very much tied up with our sense of social responsibility. I also have two memories of the still burgeoning modern America while at my grandmother's house. One was from a Detroit newscast on TV. It was announced that a, quote, people mover was going to be built in Detroit. It was a kind of pedestrian tram that moved slow enough that you could easily hop on and off. I remember a visual demonstration of how it would come to a halt if a person was accidentally in its path. Very safe, very future. The other was one night when I was helping in quotes, my grandmother with a crossword. The clue was supersonic transport, three letters. SST was the answer, and she explained to me that that was a jet plane that would go very fast, faster than the 707s I had ridden between San Antonio International and Detroit Metro. What now seems an absolute contrast, sitting in a house built in the 1930s with furniture that was decades old, some decades older than the house itself, the electric lights and the rotary phone, even in the mid-1970s, being the most advanced technology in that house. And here we were talking about people movers and jet airliners as fast as fighter planes. That was just the way things were. It's kind of like in my head, like the old 1950s rocket planes tested out over the desert, flying over ranches that were 100 years old, and the still visible wagon ruts heading west. We visited my grandmother again in the summer of 1984 after she had had a stroke. She would eventually move down to San Antonio to live with us later that year. That summer, the Tigers were 35-5 by the end of May and would go on to win the World Series. That year was the last that my grandmother was able to vote, and it was in the Michigan Democratic primary. She voted for the Reverend Jesse Jackson because, in her words, he was a man of God. By this year, with increased automation, General Motors was letting workers go, and the decline of unions became noticeable. I still have good memories from that summer, playing ball in the field behind the house with my sister and brother, walking to an ice cream parlor on Fenton Road, going to a local grocery store, the same that my mother used to walk to when she was younger. One of my cousins would buy the house with her husband, but eventually they moved. It's been decades, and I find myself wondering from time to time if the barbecue my mother built is still there and still in use. So, I kind of wonder about a lot of people in the Rust Belt states, how many of them had their neighborhoods or their grandparents' neighborhoods imprinted on them, and if that has any influence on what they view as part of America's greatness. That's all for Radio Owls tonight. If you have any questions, please post them in the comments or send me a direct message on Twitter, where my handle is at AEMCBURNEY. Thank you for listening, and have a good night.